For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Hello, it's Tuesday, 23rd of August, 2016. Welcome to the program. It's been a warm old Tuesday in Manchester. I think it's been pretty hot around the country. I think the temperatures have been skyrocketing today. So I hope you're well. Hope you've had a good day wherever you are. You can now tweet the programme. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. And it's richie@richieallen.co.uk. That's the email address. Let me know your thoughts. I'd love to hear from you. Now, if you've been following me on social media, you will know that David Icke is our guest tonight, and he joins me in around about 10 minutes' time, maybe a little under, maybe a very little bit over. David joins us, and he'll be with us right up until the end of the programme. He's been in Australia, New Zealand, London. He's off to America real soon for dates in New York City, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and then he's all over Europe on the Worldwide Wake Up Tour. So David joins us. Lots to get into with David. And I know you'll be tweeting me, and you'll be tweeting me in your hundreds. I'll do as well as I can to interject with some of the tweets and put some of your comments to David when he's on air with me shortly. Great stuff then. First of all, before I go anywhere, I want to say a massive thanks to somebody who's become a really good friend and a really, really serious supporter of the radio program. That's Mark Bajerski. Now, Bajerski is spelled Bajerski, but it's pronounced Bajerski. Mark, of course, is a healer and a medium, and he's been on this program a few times. He's a huge supporter of it, and he regularly auctions off the most beautiful jewellery, healing crystals, often encased in silver and other metals. And when he auctions these things, he gives the money to the program. He's incredible. And he auctioned a beautiful piece of jewellery off yesterday, and it raised £200 for the programme. Massive thanks to Patricia Braunschweiler, who's another good friend of the programme's. And it really is people like that, Mark, Patricia. There's another half dozen people I could name. They've been really great to the show since it began broadcasting nearly 2 years ago. I don't know any other way to say thanks, and I kind of get embarrassed. But the thanks is from the bottom of my heart. I really mean that. I'm just delighted when people do things like that. It gives us a bit of a fillip, I suppose. It gives us a bit of a boost to know that people think the programme is worth supporting. Now, before we go anywhere, the more eagle-eyed among you will have been watching my Twitter page today, Facebook page today, but more importantly, you'll be watching davidicke.com/headlines. Now, a couple of weeks back, I began tweeting somebody called Baxter Dimitri on Twitter. Baxter Dimitri allegedly was a man employed by yournewswire.com, which is an alleged e-zine. Do we even use the term e-zine anymore? As that'll tell you how unfamiliar I am with tech terms and all of that. But it's an online magazine. That's what it is, allegedly, anyway. It's run by a guy even called Sean Adeltabataboy, formerly the sole director of The People's Voice in London. Now, he's currently based in California, where he lives with his husband, a guy called Sinclair Gray Treadway. Now, I started tweeting even Baxter Dimitri, because he published a series of definitely libelous articles about a number of people. About a number of people, not just David Icke. And if there's one thing I'm happily an expert in, and there's not very many things now, and that's the truth, by the way, if there's one thing I can claim to be an expert in, it's libel law and media law. Had to be over the years. In fact, I was sent on so many courses. So they libeled David. I talked about this last week. They wrote an article. They didn't write any article. They plagiarised something written by a guy called Steve Seymour. They basically transcribed an article by him, published it, and made all sorts of innuendos about David and Zen Gardner and the Children of God and all of that. I'm not going to dwell on that. Seriously libelous. So I began to challenge Dimitri Baxter to prove that he was Dimitri Baxter. In fact, he tweeted me and asked me, why was I so silent about Zen Gardner? Why wouldn't I speak to him? So I said, of course, I'll happily give you an interview. Why don't you Skype me and I will tell you all you want to know. But needless to say, he didn't Skype me because he doesn't exist. So I challenged him to prove that he existed. I warned him about tweeting libelous statements, not only tweeting them, but also publishing them on Your Newswire and Facebook. And I said, it's all going to end very bad for you if you don't behave yourself. He didn't behave himself. He carried on with it. He began to mock me. He accused me of being a wife beater. He accused me of being homophobic. He accused me of doing things like having gay social media accounts, bizarrely. Allegedly, I own a number of gay social media accounts and I use those accounts to tweet out gay stuff, presumably. All sorts of nonsense like this, which I don't get too bothered about. But I wanted to find out who this guy was. He tweets under the Twitter handle @Baxter_Dimitri. And he's got a Facebook page called Baxter Dimitri as well, which alleges that he's a journalist, that he's been in 80 countries, and allegedly he's won arguments in every single one. What a load of bollocks. I asked some of my friends in the independent media who've travelled around the world, have you managed to be in 80 countries? And all of them, including the great David Icke, will be with us shortly, all of them said, no, not really. So anyway, some of our listeners were a bit peeved by all of this, and one of them is a guy called Alex Doust. Alex is lovely. He listens to the programme and he tweets in interesting comments pretty much most nights when he can. And Alex began digging into this Baxter Dimitri character, and he found that the profile picture being used for Baxter Dimitri, not only on Twitter and on Facebook, but on yournewswire.com, was actually the picture of a man called David Hardy, who's a sound engineer from London. And the actual picture that Baxter Dimitri was using was a picture of David Hardy taken in Russia in 2007. Do you see where this is going? Do you get where this is going? So it turns out that Sean Addle had some sort of a relationship with David Hardy back in 2007. He could have been a friend of his. He could have been a lover, whatever. He had a relationship with him. They were travelling around the world. So we today contacted David Hardy. In fact, we contacted him last night and asked David Hardy, was he aware that Sean Addle and Sinclair Gray Treadway were libelling people on social media and on their magazine, libelling people, using his image, which is a grievous crime if David Hardy isn't indeed Baxter Dimitri. And we're pretty certain at this stage that he isn't. Why are you certain? Well, after David Icke today published a series of posts showing the glaring inconsistencies in the Baxter Dimitri story, showing the old profile pictures of Baxter Dimitri, which were actually pictures of David Hardy, and the new profile picture of Baxter Dimitri, which was changed today, changed straight after DavidIcke.com began publishing all of these inconsistencies. What's going on here? Well, as I've told you time and time again, since I've been talking about this, and I did make a video about this for YouTube only a few days ago, Sean Addle Tabataboy and his husband, Sinclair Gray Treadway, are very, very, very sinister individuals. And sinister is putting it mildly. They've been using yournewswire.com, which is nothing but a clickbait website, which puts out all sorts of nonsense stories, things that never happened, claiming that people said things they never said in order to draw people to look at those articles in order for the kerching to happen. That's what the clickbait is. You click on the story, they get advertising revenue. Some of the more sinister things they've been doing on there have been using the pseudonym Baxter Dimitri. Again, the profile picture of Dimitri turns out to be, in fact, David Hardy, whom at this time we haven't heard from, but we've asked him to get in touch with us urgently, and I'll tell you why. Because if David Hardy is unaware that his picture was used as the profile picture for Baxter Dimitri, and we're pretty certain he is unaware of it, well, Sean Addle and Sinclair Gray Treadway are in very serious trouble indeed. Because identity theft carries with it a custodial sentence. It is a grievous crime. These people are sick, worthless cowards. Sean Addle was left go from his job as DavidIke.com webmaster a couple of years ago because he wasn't very good at it. Since then, he's taken every opportunity to defame, to libel, not only David, but me, and any number of people who worked around the People's Voice in London, people that Addle didn't see eye to eye with. I've been in touch with him today, Addle and Sinclair Grey Treadway and Baxter Dimitri, to ask them again which one of the profile pictures is actually Baxter Dimitri, because they were using two. One of a guy with glasses, and the other one was actually David Hardy. Doesn't get any more sinister. So I'm going to say to you, and I'm going to say it for the final time, spread the word. Your newswire is being run by two very sinister and potentially dangerous men who will say anything about anybody at any time in order to draw traffic to their website. Presumably these guys believe that because they're in California, they are immune from prosecution, either in a civil court for libel or a criminal prosecution for using somebody else's identity to commit crimes. That's all I'm going to say about these people. I understand Sean Addle has blocked me. He's blocked Hayden Hewitt from LiveLeak.com. He's blocked everybody on Twitter. And his answer to all of this is, as I speak to you now, Sean Addle, whose Twitter handle is at Sean SHHH. At Sean SHHH. His response to all of this, his answer to the questions posed by me today and David Icke, is to say that I am homophobic. I hate gay people. That is why I am targeting Sean Addle and Sinclair Grey Treadway, because I hate gay people. Not because they are snivelling cowards hiding behind a pseudonym, using an image, a supporting image of somebody who probably isn't even aware that his image has been used to publish libelous and damaging material about people. But Addle says the real reason for all of this is because I'm homophobic. Wow. It is exactly 12 minutes past the hour. It's time for a quick break. You are with the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on DavidIke.com. Check out DavidIke.com/headlines. We're also broadcasting on Fab Radio in Manchester and AlternateCurrentRadio.com. If you're listening through one of those platforms, I can tell you it warms my heart to have you on board. Back in a couple of minutes with the great David Icke. Don't go anywhere.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back to the program. It's exactly 13 minutes past the hour. My only guest tonight is a multi-million best-selling author. This year he published Phantom Self. I think it was published in February. It's been a massive hit. It's received rave reviews all around the world. And last month, or just before that, he began the Worldwide Wake Up Tour, which has already taken him from the Isle of Wight to London, to Sydney, to Melbourne, to Adelaide, to Auckland, and I've probably forgot one or two places as well. He's off to the United States next month for three massive dates, and then a number of dates in Europe as well. Check out theworldwidewakeup.com. That's where you'll find out all the information about the Worldwide Wake Up Tour. Terrific to welcome back to the programme our great friend and colleague, David Icke. Welcome back. How are you?
All right, Rich, I'm good, yeah. I'm not sure about the multi-million. I don't think I've sold that many yet.
I might be stretching it. Do you know what? Millions have read your books, my friend. Millions have read.
That is true. It's a great time. You know, when I look back 26 years ago, when this started to now, it's surreal. It's just a dream, really. And what happened in Australia, New Zealand was another big step up in everything, really, in most important to me, to make inroads into deeper into society. And people, you know, when they're stopping you in the street over and over, 13,000 miles from home on the other side of the world, to talk about the information, then you know you're getting somewhere. And when I say making deeper and deeper inroads into society, I mean the kind of people who you would have thought would never look at anything different, anything alternative, any other explanation for life and reality, who were really system people not so long ago. Those sort of people now are the ones that are turning their minds and their eyes to this. And so it's not just that numbers are increasing, but the kind of people that are looking at this information now is extremely encouraging in terms of how rigid perceptions are starting to break down. And, you know, it's extraordinary what is happening now. I mean, I remember just, though I don't want to remember too much, when I couldn't walk down the street in Britain without being laughed at by most of the people. But all the time now, constantly, more and more, I'm stopped in the street everywhere where people want to talk about this information. I was having a cup of tea this afternoon in a really little cafe on the Isle of Wight, reading my paper. And two separate people in that cafe, it was only small, came up to me. One was an older guy, and another was a young bloke. And they were very different people, very different age groups. They were all big time into the information. So, you know, when you know, I was told all those years ago in the early 90s that there was a change coming, there was a vibrational information, whatever you want to call it, a frequency change coming that was going to touch more and more people, and they were going to wake more and more people up from their coma, their slumber. It's happening. It is happening, and it is worldwide. It's an incredible feeling. It just gives me such joy, such enthusiasm to go on, given what I'm experiencing now. And, you know, you never thought this would happen because there was no sign of it 25 years ago. But now we are on the cusp of major changes for the better in terms of people awakening to the world as it is, and to themselves as they are, and not what they've been told they are.
Two things on that. The first is, of course, that's very, very necessary for a guy like you, because if you don't seize that from time to time, you can become a bit disillusioned. Is probably the wrong word, but a bit discouraged or a bit disheartened. So it's great that happens. And of course, when I spent time with you in London, I used to chuckle behind your back. We used to walk down Wembley High Street or somewhere else. So we take a trip out of Wembley and go somewhere. And most of the people coming up to you, and it happened every 10 or 15 minutes, were young people. I hate to say that even because I'm not old, but you know, people in their early to mid 20s. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is, and I don't want to go negative because we've got so many important things to talk about, but the other aspect of you making greater strides and some others like you who have been around as long as you doing great things are that you have to deal with the sort of nonsense that I mentioned in the monologue and that you've been talking about on davidicke.com headlines today. Now, how much or how little you want to get into that is entirely up to you. I've had my say on it. These are the things you just have to endure, I suppose.
Well, I've been taking a shite and abuse for 26 years, mate. You know, I've written the book on it, really. But I think it's just surreal, you know, and I think it's sad You know, I think that's what I feel most, sadness, because, you know, when you look at what's going on in the world and what is planned to go on and how we need to deal with it, how we need to alert people to that so that we can collectively deal with it. When you're starting to make really big strides in achieving that, more and more every day, to think that there's someone on the other side of the world claiming to want to get the information out, who is just wanting to damage you at every opportunity. I think it's sad. What's that line about resentment is drinking poison and waiting for the other guy to die?
Yeah.
So, you know, to wake up every morning with that in your heart and to go to sleep every night in the same state, I think is sad. It must be a nightmare. And, you know, Sean, for goodness sake, grow up, mate. You know, get on with your life, because at the moment you're walking down the street with a hole in each foot and a smoking gun under each arm. And you're going to go on doing that until you get on with your life and stop trying to damage other people. And I wish you well. I really wish you well. And I would just end with this. I'll just give you one quote, Sean, if you're listening. Mark Twain, if you tell the truth, you don't have to remember anything. And I think that's a bit of a lesson of today. And it's surreal. I mean, Baxter Dimitri, who is this person?
Yeah.
Who's hurling this abuse in all directions and making up these clickbait stories that are absolutely ludicrous in their headlines and have no support for the headline in the text, but people have clicked on by then, so that's fine. And Baxter, unfortunately, if people look at what has happened, has had a very bad day. He started out as being someone else and he ended up as two statues. It can't be easy. It can't. but that's what I would say, you know, because... You know, I've taken historic levels of abuse. All this stuff is a fly to an elephant's back to me. You know, it's me you're talking to. Look what I've been through. Do you think that I care less about this? What it's doing is destroying Sean Edel. That's what it's doing.
And of course, the abuse from far more serious operators with, you know, greater capability than the likes of him. I don't have your experience and all of your humility. I tend to go for the throat even. I'm not somebody who carries a lot of anger with him, but I'm somebody who I can't stand injustice. I can't stand people doing things like that, bullying, cowardly things, saying things about people that are harmful. I'm not just talking about you, but much of the other stuff that's been put out there by that Your News Wire website. I was determined to unmask these people. And I have to say again, a huge thanks to Alex Doust, because Alex came through. Thing about social media today, folks, if you've been on it for 8, 9, 10 years, as long as Facebook is, and you've not been watching what you've been saying and what you've been doing, you've left a lot of footprints and a lot of fingerprints behind you. And that's what Sean Edel and his cohorts have done. I bear him no ill will either. I don't bear anybody any ill will. And I want, like you, I want to move away from talking about him and that particular website.
Yeah, but I think one thing it's important to point out, because, you know, if you get into the deeper realms of reality and how we interact with it, you know, the intent you put out is the intent you get back. And it, you know, people think that they, for instance, when they say things about other people, that they're saying things about other people. They're not. They think they are. What they're doing is making statements about themselves. They are expressing something within them that is making them externalize it in the way they do when they think they're attacking someone else. And if you keep putting that stuff out, then you'll draw to you the consequences of that, and you'll keep doing it, and you'll keep blaming other people, and you'll keep saying it's someone else's fault, that someone else is to blame, and you get resentful about these people who you have sought to explain your experiences away, when actually you've created them yourself. You know, it's about taking control of our lives back and understanding that what you put out, you get back. And eventually that process will end in an unpleasant way. It doesn't have to. You just change what you're putting out. Stop putting out hate. Stop putting out resentment and just get on with your life and not trying to damage other people's lives. And then you'll see how your life will change if you do that. But, you know, it's just like people, they need to vent what's inside of them. And when that what's inside of them is resentment and bitterness and hatred, then they cannot do anything but experience that in terms of attracting what they put out. And life's not going to be nice. So, you know, it's in these people's hands to change what they put out, and they'll change what they get back. But I'm not sure that will happen anytime soon.
So we're leaving that to one side, because that's obviously somebody with a very bitter personal problem. But just to touch on something that I spoke with Mike Rivero about last night, we didn't really get into it, actually. I mean, you sent me a text. I was annoyed I hadn't seen it. We didn't really get into it with Mike, but Mike touched on it with respects to Hillary Clinton coming after the independent media, or the independent media that's doing a good job of exposing stuff. But there are elements of the independent media that, maybe not for personal bitter or twisted reasons like we've been discussing, but maybe for other reasons, are also becoming a bit of a hindrance. And I think that goes a long way. That goes side by side with what you described earlier on, which is that we're seeing the success now. Slowly but surely, we're seeing that more and more people who you never would have believed would have picked up a David Icke book, or would have had a listen to something on YouTube by Jim Mars or by Rivero or by whoever. We're seeing that. So is that why we're seeing such a lot of nonsense in some sections of the independent media? What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I've said many times before, you know, people talk about the independent media or the alternative media as if it was like one entity. It's not. The independent media, as it's called, some of it isn't, the alternative media, let's call it, is a massive spectrum that on one end is almost imperceptibly different from the mainstream. It acts like the mainstream. It operates like the mainstream. It just has a slightly different fix on world events. And then you go right across this vast spectrum of the so-called alternative media. And at the other end, you've got people like me and others who are questioning everything. You see, on the mainstream alternative end of this spectrum, they won't go into alternative realities and things that are considered far out, because their quote scientific and or religious point of perception and belief will not allow them to do that. They'll still go with the mainstream science version of reality or some religious book, usually the Bible. But you go to the other end of this spectrum and you get people who are questioning everything and saying, whatever I've been told, it's now got to stand up to my scrutiny, or otherwise I'm not accepting it in my reality. And that's where the cutting edge is. And that's what's going to change the world, if you like, and change human society, because it's going into those realms where everything comes from. You see, what we see is only a projection of what we don't see. It's in the realms of what we don't see, and they're hidden beyond the frequency band of visible light, human sight, et cetera, where both the manipulation is ultimately coming from and where the answers to that manipulation are ultimately coming from. And so this vast spectrum of belief and perception called the alternative media is not an entity in and of itself. And what I am, you know, quite, you know, not alarmed about, but what I'm disappointed about in some areas is the way that while the cutting edge is moving all the time, as I've just described. And I would add this, you know, what I'm finding around the world, including among people who have up to this point been system thinkers, is that their greatest fascination and interest that they have in this information is in the far out stuff, as they would have perceived before. And no one's more surprised than me when you get into these things that appear to, you know, normal thinking, programmed normal thinking, to be right out there and crazy. They're the kind of subject areas that people are most interested in, and I find that very, very encouraging. It shows that, you know, this awakening from the program, the postage stamp consensus, as I call it, the postage stamp normal, is actually moving much faster than even just looking at world events in a different way. But what is sad, again, I think, is what I'm seeing, and it's been kind of concentrated by the Trump-Clinton election. Anyone who has done any research into the Clintons, and I started researching them in the early 1990s, I mean, the Clinton body count, all these people who had something on the Clintons who were no longer with us or weren't soon afterwards, the fact that they were running drugs with the Bush family through the MENA airstrip in Arkansas, and all the manipulation of finances, manipulation of politics, and all the drug running, but also the fundamental involvement in mind control and slavery, mind slaves and sex slaves, all that I started uncovering in the 1990s and is in And the Truth Shall Set You Free, which I wrote in 1994, and in The Biggest Secret. So all this stuff that's coming out about Hillary Clinton in terms of her corruption and what have you is of absolutely no surprise to me. And shocking as it is to the mainstream of the public arena, that where the mainstream media are actually putting it out, it's the alternative media who are actually doing it. It might be shocking what's coming out in terms of the emails and all the rest of it, but it is small fry compared with what these people, the Clintons, have been involved in, often with their great bosom buddies, the Bushes. And when I say that, it's quite a sobering thought to think that from 1980, we had a Bush in the White House. We called him Reagan, but Father Bush was really the in president. Charge. We had two terms of that, Bush-Reagan, if you like. Then we had a term of Bush. Then we had a term of Clinton. Then we had another term of Clinton. Then we had a term of Boy Bush and another term of Boy Bush. Two terms of Obama. And now, quite possibly, Mrs. Clinton in the White House. Now, when you think that those two families are fundamentally operating together, then it really does offer a complete personification of what I've been saying all these years, which is it doesn't matter who you vote for, the same hidden hand gets in. And if you look at the American situation, where there's more than 300 million people, and still there's this naivety that America is a free country because anyone can become president, and then you look at what I've just said about the presidency since 1980, you can see actually how stitched up it is. And so we have this Clinton-Trump election, and it's basically the natural end product of where this has been leading. You know, we're supposed to have political choice, and we have the choice between this mega crook and worse, Hillary Clinton, and Donald Trump, who I wouldn't trust to tell me the time in a room full of clocks. And of course, both massive supporters of Israel. So that's the Israel-Palestine policy sorted, whoever gets in. And this idea that Donald Trump is anti-establishment is ludicrous. You don't make the money he has, although I don't think he's made as much as he claims. You don't run casinos. You don't have building empires.
No.
If you're anti-system.
So tell me this then, David. Why are so many people in the United States, people that we know, and I'm not taking another shot at Alex and the gang. It's not just Alex and the gang. It's lots of people. People that we like and we admire are buying it, and they're endorsing this clown and saying this is the way. Why is that happening, do you think?
Well, this is where I was leading to in the end of what I've just said. It's still this hope, this clinging on to this dead idea that there are political answers to what needs to change. When Trump started saying some of the things that people in the American alternative media are calling for and support, well, away he went. And what's happened is an anti-Clinton mentality has become, for so many people, a pro-Trump mentality. And what I think is sad is that we're seeing a blatant fraud in Donald Trump being supported by parts of the alternative media who should be exposing him. And we're also seeing, and this in many ways is very concerning, really. And that's the way that some parts of the alternative media are going backwards, not forwards, to that cutting edge. And what I mean by that is by getting behind a politician running for president, as if that's going to change anything, is going back to the old paradigm of we've got to change this through politics. Politics is there to stop change, not to make change. That's why it's there. That's its job. But there's also this other thing I'm seeing where this discernment of situations like terrorist attacks, where you would be saying, well, hold on a minute, does the official story stand up? And look at what's wrong with it. This is not right. That doesn't make sense. Is it a problem, reaction, solution? In some areas, that's being put to one side. And a terrorist attack, which the authorities say was Muslim extremists, is jumped upon to make propaganda against Muslims in general and to demonize Muslims in general. And, one of the things I mentioned in my talks was a guy called Saeed Ramzi. He's an undercover reporter for a French TV station. And he went undercover last year, a few months ago, in a, quote, terrorist cell in Europe. And he came out and he said they had very little understanding of Islam, these people. And he called them fast food jihadists. He said one of the main lessons that he learned was that I never saw any Islam in the whole affair. No will to improve the world. And what he found in this terrorist cell were lost, frustrated, suicidal, and easily manipulated youths who had been promised a palace and a winged horse of gold and rubies if they took part in terrorism. We have to see the shades of grey. The truth is never in a single dot. It's in your peripheral vision. That's where the truth is, and that's where we need to look for it, in the shades of grey. And when you have Muslims in general, I mean you know me and religion. I think they're all mind control.
Mind control.
I think religion, I don't care what it's called, is the greatest form of mind control ever created. But that doesn't mean, again, shades of grey, that people shouldn't follow a religion if that's what they choose to do. Although it's very indicative, I think, to me, that if you're born in a Muslim family, you're almost certainly going to be a Muslim. If you're born in a Christian family, you're almost certainly going to be a Christian, if you take a religion up at all. If you're born into a Jewish family, you're going to follow Judaism. I wonder where the choice is in that.
Yeah, there's none.
When you've got such a blatant, born into a Muslim, Jewish, Christian family, become a follower of Judaism, rather, a Muslim or a Christian. I mean, where's the choice in that? It's obviously a program download. That's where it comes from, overwhelmingly, because of the environment that you were born into. But if people want to go and follow a religion, well, you know, that's good. If that's what they want to do, it's called, you know, do with your life what you choose to do with it. But what we are seeing is this black and white view that if you're Muslim, you are a danger, and that all encompassing nonsensical view is colouring the way that people see Muslims who have no desire to be violent and no desire to harm anybody. And to see parts of the alternative media put aside looking at these terrorist events on the basis of, is the government telling the truth, but instead jumping on the fact that Muslims are blamed for it, and thus demonizing all Muslims, which of course brings us back to the whole Trump situation, where he's basically doing that as well, in terms of, you know, tarring everyone with the same brush, and it's these parts of the alternative media are at the moment in reverse, and when we need to be moving on and realizing that the answers are A, not political, and B, that any view that is black and white is almost all the time wrong.
Can I jump in there with my tuppence worth on that? I can't find an argument with what you said, but I'm going to throw a butt in there. I think you're right. 99% of what you said there is right. And maybe we're going to go down this road. Maybe I've interrupted too soon again. But I think with some of them, I think there's a financial motivation for doom. Now, I'm not saying for a second that some of them get paid by the likes of Donald Trump. They certainly do not. I'm not saying that at all. But I think they want to situate themselves somewhere and play to an audience. And financial and advertising revenue reasons are behind the dramatic change in the narrative, David.
I don't know. All I can do, Richie, is just observe that there has been a change in the narrative, and I don't think it's for the better, because, you know, whoever gets into the White House, whether it's Clinton and with all these glaring health problems that are being well documented by the alternative media, whether she's going to make it all the way because of that, who knows? But whoever gets in, the hidden hand will get in. There's no question about that. I mean, when you look at Donald Trump and you look at his statements through his life, never mind through his campaigns to be president, he changes his state stance all the time. He says he was for that when he wasn't. He says he was against that when he wasn't. And of course, let's not forget, you know, I've just been through this reprise of the Bush-Clinton domination of the White House since 1980. And let's not forget that Donald Trump and the Clintons have been very close over the years. And you know, we've got to be much more streetwise. We've got to take a step back and observe from afar and not get pulled in. We get pulled into the game, we start playing the game by supporting players in the game as if they're going to change anything. They're not. We need to hold to how we have always seen this, which is politics is an irrelevance. It's a game. It's a hoax. It's a sleight of hand. Don't get pulled into it, because a lot of people are. You know why? Because they hope it's true. You know, the easiest way to manipulate people is to tell them what they want to hear. You know, the people want to think that Trump is going to come in and change everything, that Trump is really going to make America great again. But what does that mean? More wars? That's what America's been involved in since it was formed. An extraordinary number of wars, no matter who's in power, one after the other. I mean, they want to believe it. And what you want to believe, you are more likely to allow yourself to get pulled into. If we're going to be streetwise, we've got to keep a step back, just realize and hold on the fact that, as people have said before, the political system is rigged, completely rigged. But now what we're saying is it's rigged for Trump. No, it's rigged. And yes, of course, the media is rigged against Trump, because what they really want is Clinton. I mean, Trump would do, but they really want Clinton. So, of course, the media is rigged against Trump. Of course it is. But the system, the process itself is rigged. It's there to keep the hidden hand in power. Don't get pulled into it. But so many are. And they're moving back from the cutting edge by doing that. Now, I think that's sad.
It's terrible. I'm going to read a few tweets, and you're going to want to jump in there once or twice, but I'm going to ask you not to. I'll read a couple of quick tweets. And then you and I talked earlier about what we'd like to talk about. The listeners have been tweeting in their hundreds, and they want comment from you on the historic child sex abuse inquiry and the loss of Lowell Goddard. They want a bit of comment later on Omran Dakhniesh, or Dakhniesh, the young Syrian boy. They want to hear about that. And what was the third thing? There was something else they wanted me to ask you about as well. It'll come to me in a minute. But I'm going to read some of these tweets just very quickly, and I'm going to say hello to a few people. Hundreds have come in. Hi to Wayne Winterfell. Wayne, how are you? Thanks for tweeting. Kirsty MacDonald disagrees entirely with us. For feck's sake, she says, read the Quran, maybe meet an ex-Muslim, or just open your eyes. Islam is in no way peaceful, says Kirsty. Kirsty, you're entitled to your opinion. Alex says, I just want to say hi to Alex Doust again. JP says, Trump will be president, he said, because the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers own his debt of $650 million, no less so far, he says. Hi to Chris as well, Irish Too Cool on Twitter. To the healer Scott Cornish, good friend of ours. How you doing, Scott? There is no God, he says. There is only energy. What people perceive to be God is the universal energy that flows through us, says Scott. Hi to Tony as well, to La Antenna, to Lady Alba, and to the lovely Lou, lovely woman, who says, you're the guy she'd most like to have over for a dinner guest, because nobody would be more interesting than you, she says. Right, I'll leave that one there. You're right, by the way, Lou, I won't argue with that. Tony says as well, plenty of gullible fools all over the world, he says. Yeah, I can agree with that, but maybe we need to try and understand these people more. Hi to Faisal, to Danny Warden, to David Peacock, to Sean MacDonald. Paul Jackson, how you doing, Paul? Listening to David agrees with him. So many people, says Paul, not believing the official version. This is why people are now believing the Earth is not a globe. Paul, I think, is one of these people who believes that the Earth is flat. Again, that's his opinion. Joanne says, great to hear the show back on air, Richie, and love and blessings to David Icke and to all. Hi to Luke Madison, to David Kona, to Robin Hood, to Mark Richards, to Mark Holden in Lanzarote. And I could be here all night. Spirit Samba as well on Twitter, and everybody else. Right.
Shall I go through a few of those?
Go on, go ahead.
Well, just very quickly. It's not really about the Quran. It's about people. And I've met lots of Muslims. I've been to the Middle East and met people there. And they were some of the nicest, kindest, most peaceful people you could ever meet. So whatever, you know, that is claimed to be in the Quran, they were Muslims and they were peaceful people. You'll get other people who will look at the same book and they will use it as a excuse to do terrible things, because they are not peaceful people. They are violent people. And thus they will seek ways to express that violence, as others need ways to express their hate. And if that mentality was born in a Jewish family, that they would be a violent Jewish person. If they're born in a Christian family, they'd be a violent Christian person. And it's them. That's what it is. And it's no good just talking about a whole massive group of people in one line and just writing them off as this, that, and the other because of the acts of some. It's crazy, it's very, very not good for the world in terms of the black and white way that we see it. And so because there are people doing deeply unpleasant things who've migrated into Europe to women and other things in other ways in Europe, and people carrying out terrorist attacks, mostly of the kind of people that I've just described from that undercover reporter, that suddenly we must therefore perceive anyone who's Muslim as being like that. It's nonsense, and it's fantastic for the foundation technique of controlling the many by the few, and that is divide and rule. We've got to see life, if we're going to get over divide and rule, we've got to see life in shades of grey and realise that there are deeply violent people who are white, there are deeply violent people that are Muslim, there are deeply violent people that are Jewish, and deeply violent people who are black South Africans. And there are peaceful, loving people among all those same groups. And if we start to see it in that way, then divide and rule becomes very much more difficult, because we're dealing and making judgments based on the person and not the group as a whole, which can include and does include people who perceive the world in very different ways, even though they call themselves the same thing.
Now, just before I'm going to take a break, right? But just before we take the break, I've been asked to ask you by a number of people for a brief comment on the Celtic Football Club, the fine they received from the football authorities of Europe, which I think is UEFA. In fact, I know it's UEFA, because when they played a team from Israel they're playing the second leg tonight, but in the first leg of a Champions League qualifier, the Celtic fans decided to make a statement and they held up Palestinian flags. The club was fined for it, and there is a campaign now called Match the Fine for Palestine, which is a kind of a spin-off to try and raise a few bob for the beleaguered people of Gaza. I know, obviously, you've been talking about the conditions and the brutality that Palestinians have had to live under for years. You've been talking about it. It's caused you all sorts of bother, of course, in terms of some of the things you've been called. So, of course, you have a comment on that. Andy, and I think it's Andy, by the way, who sponsors Jordan when Jordan comes on, the lovely Andy Hunter from freestylehomes.com. Lovely guy, Andy. What do you think of that one, mate?
Well, I wonder if the same reaction would happen if there was an Israeli football club and the Israeli fans put up Israeli flags. I think Netanyahu would be screaming at every microphone that could be put in front of him personally. And I think, you know, this actually does come on from what I've just been talking about. If you demonize a whole people for the acts of a few, then that demonization kind of deletes the same level of empathy you would normally have, because they've demonized. So in some perverse way, they deserve it. So if you can demonize Palestinians and Muslims in general as mass murdering maniacs, and that's what Netanyahu, of course, is always trying to do to justify the horrors he inflicts upon them, then you're going to get more people who are going to say, they deserve it. Drop a bomb on all of them. Yeah, but you've heard that. I've heard that. And it's when you start demonizing a group, when in fact what we're facing here is open air concentration camp in Gaza with vast numbers of people within it who only want peace, who only want enough to eat, who only want to see their children grow up, who just want to get on with their lives in some sort of mode worth having instead of just existing as they are at the moment in a concentration camp, open air concentration camp that has been devastated by mass bombing by state of the art technology. And then the rebuilding process virtually being next to non-existent compared with what needs to be done. So we have these people who are not terrorists, who are not trying to, you know, kill anybody, the vast overwhelming majority. They're trying to survive. They're trying to survive under the control of a vicious, vicious state of imposition and racism, which is what the Israeli regime is. It's unbelievably racist, and as this whole racial superiority it has in relation to where it is compared with where the Arabic people are and the Gaza people are. And we have, because of the fact that Israel is in fact a Rothschild fiefdom, we have this sliver of land with, 8 million people, having this massive impact on the world, this incredible fundamental impact on the Middle East, and having such influence in the governments of the world and the government groupings of the world, like the UN, etc., that the Palestinians' voice is not heard and can't be heard. And so when you have a football match and these Celtic fans want to make a statement of solidarity with these Palestinian people in the horrific, horrific daily, hourly lives that they are forced to live because of the oppressor, to get fined for it by dark suit administrators of a sport, I think is outrageous, it would not be the same if it was the other way.
It certainly would.
And of course, the Palestinians have very few people to talk for them. You know, most politicians around the world are so terrified of the Rothschild stroke Israeli influence that they keep their mouths shut. At best, keep their mouths shut, or at worst, become sycophants for Israel. And this is not about politics, and it's not about race. It's about basic humanity, the basic humanity of looking at people in terrible straits who are being treated in a fascist way, no other word for it. And the world looks on while the leaders of a sliver of land of 8 million people basically do what the hell they like. And it's the way it's always been since the invasion. And it's the way it will go on being until enough people say we're not having it. And you know, this campaign of boycotting, which has got a lot of speed around the world, boycotting businesses in these occupied territories, has become so successful that, of course, they're running around now using their puppets in government around the world to try to put it down and destroy it.
Criminalize it, aren't they, David?
Criminalize it, yeah.
In Canada, they've tried to criminalize it, yeah.
And also doing the same with companies. When you look at the influence on the world, the influence in the United States, the influence in Europe and everywhere else that Israel has, it's clearly not because of 8 million people in a tiny piece of land in the Middle East. It's because of who controls that land, what Israel really is, and who owns Israel. That's where the influence comes from. I mean, you know, I have this phrase. I think it really works. Take a deep breath. Take a step back. Look at it again. Look at it dispassionately. Why does Israel have such phenomenal influence on events, given what it is? Because what it is just a fiefdom for what really has that influence, and that's the House of Rothschild and all the networks that come from it.
We are going to pause. The third thing, do you like the way I have to say my THs there, Reiki? Third, TH. The third thing that people wanted to hear you talk about, of course, was whether or not we're going to leave the European Union. So what we're going to try and do in the final hour, we're going to talk a little bit about Omran Dakhniesh and the journalist, or the photojournalist, Mahmoud Razlan. This is very interesting. David will comment on Lowell Goddard and the child sex abuse inquiry, and we'll try and squeeze in a little bit about Brexit as well. Our guest on this programme is the one and only David Icke. Go to davidicke.com/headlines. That's where the news is. As well as that, there's a worldwidewakeup.com. If you're in America, and many of our listeners are, if you can get to see David in New York, Los Angeles or San Francisco, it will be a life-changing experience. All the details at theworldwidewakeup.com. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk. Now. Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is The Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
Welcome back. Saying a third is difficult. A number of you laughing at that on Twitter. When I was on local radio many years ago, I was criticised regularly in the confession sessions. That's when the head of programmes or the head of music critiques your programmes, and I was hammered for not pronouncing my THs, to the point where I got very, very insecure about it. I saw it later on, I thought, well, it's local radio, and Irish people say 33 and a third. We don't say 33 and a third, it's difficult, but anyway, you get there. Right, loads of tweets coming in. I want to just quickly go through one or two, then I'm going to shut up and we're going to talk to David about the big story of last week when I was away. That's the story of the Syrian boy. We've seen presenters on NBC News and CNN in America crying as they look at the, it must be said, tragic looking picture and video of a young boy sitting in the back of an ambulance even after an air raid. We'll come to that now in a couple of minutes. Hi to Natalie Stacey. Hope all is going well in the pub, Natalie. Lovely to hear from you. To Tommy B as well. Tommy, how are you? Nice to hear from you, Tommy. We will get to Brexit with David a bit later on in the programme. Lots of discussion going on. If you want to debate with other people, you go to Twitter, you put Richie Allen Show, all one word into Twitter, then you press enter. When you do that, you see all the tweets I've had. So you can chat with others and you can debate with others as well. It's good. Okay, hi to Jane. How you doing, Jane? That's Jekko Jane on Twitter as well. I said Sue, didn't I? And Scott and all of that. Right, good stuff. Right. I came across a video on LiveLeak.com today. LiveLeak is run by Hayden Hewitt. It's one of the biggest websites in the world. It's a wonderful resource, like DavidIcke.com, to find info you don't get in the mainstream. Really interesting report on that. I don't know if it was posted today. I just found it today. David was looking at it. David's been following this story as well. The story of Omran Dakhniesh, 5-year-old boy, rescued after a bombing in Aleppo, we were told. Picture was taken of him in an ambulance, dazed and confused and covered in ash or soot or whatever. It looked terrible, didn't it? It looked terrible. But David Icke, my friend, it looks like not all is as it seems. And in the following days, right up until today, and it's ongoing, it looks like that story is beginning to unravel as well. What have you made of it?
Well, you know, one of the greatest forms of manipulation of perception and thus manipulation of action and reaction is emotion. You know, people interact with the world emotionally, overwhelmingly. And therefore, if you can get people into an emotional state, the kind of emotional state that you want, then you can get them to not just agree to things, but to support, even demand things they wouldn't otherwise have done without the emotional charge that you've manipulated them to have. And, you know, these people are, they are a deleted of the ability to have empathy. They have no empathy. This is why they do what they do. This is why these bloodlines and these families do what they do. They do not have an emotional consequence for what they do like the rest of us do. That's when, you know, people say to me, well, they would never do that. No, you would never do that. They would do that and get off on it because they don't have the emotional consequence that we have. They cannot put themselves emotionally into the position of those that they make suffer. So, they know the target population does have that emotional, empathetic, or much of it does, ability. And so to get people to agree to things that or to perceive things in the way you want, a very effective way of doing it is to trigger people's emotion. So you look at this Orman Daknish, this five-year-old, and I was looking at that picture again today, and I watched the video that you just mentioned. You cannot help but feel it in the heart when you look at that. You because empathy demands it. Empathy will have nothing else. And what we have seen, of course, with the United States and Britain, etc., losing the, if you like, the propaganda war in Syria more and more, you've had this kind of explosion of emotion as a result of that picture. And the narrative with that emotion or state has been basically the Russians and Assad did this. Now that's been basically the narrative. If you look at it, it was Russian bombing of rebels. And of course, rebels is just code for American proxy army fighting Assad. And what it's understandable that we feel these emotions. And my goodness me, we should. I mean, look at that kid. But we've also, again, if we're going to be streetwise, we can feel that emotion, but not get manipulated by it. We can feel emotion for the child, but also not forget that that child was there ultimately because the United States and the hidden hand behind the United States and Britain, big time Britain, started that attack on Assad, which has led to the catastrophe that has followed. And that can get lost when you get pulled into emotion. You stop thinking straight, because that's what a great charge of emotion does, and you lose, again, peripheral vision. All you can see is that which is triggering the emotion. And if you look at what happened almost a year ago now to that three-year-old Aylan Kurdi, from Kobani in Syria. He was the three-year-old little boy found on the beach. Now, when it comes to triggering empathetic emotion and empathetic reaction, I mean, there can't be many pictures like that little boy lying on the beach dead as a result of drowning, trying to get across into Europe with his family and others. And what followed that, of course, it went around the world and people felt that emotion again. What followed that was a massive increase in the number of migrants coming into Europe on the back of that. It was in the aftermath, if you remember, Richie, of that photograph, that massive emotional charge that was felt around the world.
Oh, yeah.
That Mrs. Merkel, who is owned by the Hidden Hand down to her DNA, opened the doors of Germany to anybody. And if you remember, because of that picture, this is how powerful this manipulation is. That picture, you had Germans on the on the station platforms applauding the migrants as they came in. And I tell you why, because it's all manipulation, mate. It's all psychological and emotional manipulation. The reason they did that is they associated all these people coming into Europe with that little boy, that image, that that they were that little boy. That's what the emotional connection was and why it played out like that. But again, it's shades of grey. People who are in war zones and in terrible situations need to be helped. They need to be given shelter. They need to be allowed to get to places where they have safety, where they have food, where they have shelter. But that emotional charge, because of that horrific picture of Aylin Kurdi, meant that everyone coming in, a great numbers of them, were not coming away from war zones. They were taking advantage of the fact that the doors were opening. But they were all associated at that time with that little child, that three-year-old on the beach. And now, of course, things are being seen in a different light because we're back to shades of grey. Not everyone coming into Europe, A, is a refugee from war. Wars created by the West, and therefore the West should be giving them shelter. There are people coming into Europe who, in that same migration who are deeply, deeply, deeply unpleasant people and have a different way of seeing women, for instance, and all that. And so let's not forget that the men who were jailed for the drowning of Aylin Kurdi and the others that died with him were Syrian men, right? So we've got to get out of this mode of black and white. Syrians good, Syrians bad. No, most Syrians are lovely people. Some of them are very deeply unpleasant people who are doing this, trafficking people to their deaths. And people coming to Europe, peaceful people, some of them are deeply unpleasant people. It's not black and white, but people always try to see it like that and to paint it like that, which is what we're talking about earlier with parts of the alternative media who are doing that now, or Muslims bad. And we have a situation where emotion is a massive vehicle for manipulating people. As a result of the emotional outpouring for Aylin Kurdi, vast numbers of people went into Europe that wouldn't normally have got in, not refugees, opportunists. And now the consequence, that's what the Hidden Hand wanted. I mean, you look at Soros, you look at Merkel, you look at other agents of the Hidden Hand, they're all pushing for this mass migration into Europe because that's the plan, because they want a cultural war. They want civil war in Europe because you create chaos and upheaval, easiest thing in the world to manipulate. That's why people like Soros have been caught out, even by some a mainstream, at least one mainstream television station in America, of doing the same there. They want this, and they've got to the situation where they are now, which is what they want, massively because of a single picture that opened the doors of this three-year-old Aylin Kurdi. And I'm looking at this picture and the use of it by Orman Dakhnish. And, of course, the photographer, as you indicated, that took the picture, Mahmoud Razlan, is connected to, you can see pictures of them together, to a terrorist group that beheaded a Palestinian child.
Now, this is really important. What David is saying here is absolutely true. The guy, Mahmoud Razlan, is pictured with friends of his who are from a very difficult to pronounce Islamist group in Syria. I think it's Harakat Nur al-Din al-Zenki. And those guys that he's pictured with, it isn't doctored in any way, it is him with those guys. As David just said there, they were responsible for that gruesome beheading of that young boy. Again, a story that was covered in the British mainstream press as an example of the horrors in Syria and what's happening in Syria and because of Assad and all of that. And he is linked to these guys, David. And this is the guy who's come forward with the picture of young Omran in the back of the ambulance.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, let's look at that again. in terms of, and in the light of what I've been saying tonight, what is ISIS doing, this front for the United States? It's alleged, they allege that they're Islamic people, but they are attacking who? White people overwhelmingly? No. European people overwhelmingly? No. Arab people, Muslim people. It's an attack by an Islamic, allegedly or Islamic extremist group upon fellow followers of Islam. You know, it's they've created in effect a civil war across the Middle East with Muslims fighting Muslims. And of course, fueled by people like Saudi Arabia, who are just fronts for the Americans, Europe, and the Hidden Hand. That's why America and Britain are arming the Saudi royal family and the Saudi military to do absolute horrors and mass murder and catastrophe in the Yemen. And why the Saudi Arabians and the Qatar have been the vehicle for arming these groups that then attack fellow Muslims. What's happening here is a civil war has been created where Muslims are fighting Muslims, which is exactly what the Hidden Hand wants, because then it's much easier to take over. And if Putin had not come in, and you know, you're not the leader of Russia for as long as he has been leader, unless you are absolutely bloody ruthless. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, Putin is, running a fairyland. But if he had not come in, then Assad would have gone by now and they'd have got what they wanted. And so, again, this picture of this little five-year-old taken by this photographer connected to this beheading terrorist group, mad people, completely bonkers, has been used to further demonize Russia and Assad because they're still trying to get to the end goal that they want, which is just taking over Syria and then moving on elsewhere.
So we're not far away. Sorry to interrupt you, David. So we're not really far away then from Theresa May and the next US president, who I'm pretty certain it'll be Hillary Clinton. So let's just say it is. We're not too far away from Theresa May and Hillary Clinton announcing to the public of Great Britain and the United States and to the world at large that unless Assad does this by, let's say, the 21st of October, well, no, it wouldn't be, would it? It would be maybe December or maybe January next year after the election. Unless he does this by then, we'll have no choice but to launch a ground war. That's where we're going, right?
Well, that's been the plan all along. But, I mean, the Americans are already on the ground. And what we're seeing is things starting to move into place in this conflict that is planned and has been long planned, as I've been saying, for a long, long time, where the West is pitched against Russia and China. When I was in Australia, it was all kicking off in the South China Sea in relation to China claiming rights to areas of the South China Sea, and that Hague tribunal saying no, it's not yours, it's the Philippines, and America coming out, oh, China's terrible and they must be stopped from doing this, and there's various things going on in the South China Sea now with American naval shipping and Chinese. Also, there's a big conflict there between Japan and China over the East China Sea. And in the Middle East now, in terms of Syria, now you've had for the first time Russian planes bombing in Syria from Iranian air bases. This is pulling Iran more into it. We've had the announcement that China is wanting to get closer to Assad. They've always been in the background in Syria, supporting Assad, just like Russia. But they want to get more, if you like, high profile in their support for Assad. And then we've got the things going on in Ukraine after a completely manipulated so-called People's Revolution. And so these pieces are being moved into place. And, you know, what we need to do is to get out. This is what I'm trying to do as one individual, is to get out to as many people as possible around the world that what this plan is, this plan for the Third World War, to complete the transformation of human society into a global centralized state, a world government and a world army to stop this war ever happening again. That's the line they'll take. So if we can get out, and I know this has an impact from people I'm meeting more and more, if we can get out what the plan is before it becomes blatant, then it dilutes in people's minds their ability to buy the lie, to buy the narrative. If they know it was planned all along and they see it start to unfold, hold on a minute, this is what they're planned to happen, and it dilutes the impact. You know, if the truth about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq had have got out in a big way before the invasion, they would have found it much, much harder to justify the invasion. Information and getting it out ahead of the game is very, very important, because otherwise people meet these long planned situations as random events that come together and lead to war, when actually it's all been manipulated all along. It's very, very important we get this information out, because it is the puzzle pieces and the pieces on the chessboard, as Brzezinski would call it, are being moved quite, to anyone that's followed this, are blatantly being moved into place. And, you know, Syria is a powder keg. It could kick off any time in terms of Russia and the West.
It's 21 minutes past the hour. That I'm mindful of time, because I do want to talk about the child sex abuse inquiry and also get a word on the idea. Well, I suppose the absolute desperate misery that people are expressing to me through social media is that they went out and voted that Britain should leave the European Union, and they now believe that it's very unlikely it's going to happen. We'll come to that in a minute. Before we do that, though, I just want to mention, David is in the United States. He's leaving, I think, next week to go there, maybe the week after. He's in New York Grand Prospect Hall on September the 10th. That'll be an amazing, amazing event, that. The day before the 15th anniversary of 9/11. He's then off to Los Angeles on September 17th at the Irvine Marriott. And on September the 24th, he's at the Craneway Pavilion in San Francisco. Go to davidicke.com or theworldwidewakeup.com for more information on getting tickets for any of those events. It's terrific. It's something that, as I said earlier on, will change your life. It really will. So we'll just move then to something else that happened during my 3-week summer holiday. And that was Lowell Goddard, the New Zealand woman, the New Zealand judge who was appointed as the latest head of the Historic Child Sex Abuse Inquiry. She was appointed by Theresa May, our listeners will remember that, who also appointed Elizabeth Butler-Sloss and Fiona Wolfe. Should have had to resign as Home Office Minister, or as a Home Secretary. Should have had to leave politics in disgrace after appointing two women with very strong ties to people suspected of either abusing children or covering up that abuse. But no, that's not the way things work these days. She's become Prime Minister since appointing Goddard. Goddard is gone. David, some of the victims who really, God love them, who suffered unimaginably, at least for me it's unimaginable anyway, and maybe don't understand what's really going on, they believe that they were onto something with Lowell Goddard. They're now devastated. You've been writing about this longer than anybody, going way back to excuse me, The Biggest Secret, Children of the Matrix, all the other books. What's going on here with the resignation of Lowell Goddard?
Well, it's a classic technique of drag it out and drown it in procedure, in documentation, in administration. I read an article about this inquiry by a journalist who'd been to a number of sessions of it, and nothing was happening because there was, for instance, so many people legally represented, organizations galore, all wanted a say, all wanted to get their oar in, that nothing was happening. I mean, the simplest thing was taking forever to do. And what they've done, and we've not really had a detailed explanation for why Lowell Goddard resigned, as far as I've seen anyway. I was in New Zealand, funnily enough, where she comes from, when it happened. But what they're doing is giving so many things, so many cases, so many situations to this inquiry to judge on and to investigate, that it's being drowned in documents, in procedures, in lawyers, all of it, and it's not moving. And when you've got a situation that you don't want to come out, then what you do is you delay it coming out. You throw spanners in its works wherever you can. And I think it is possible, it seems to be one of the things that's coming out, that Lowell Goddard basically looked at it and just said, where do I start? She was saying she didn't understand some areas of British law, which doesn't really help, to say the least. But, you know, when you look at the scale of it, and the all the different things it's supposed to be investigating, and the scale of all the procedure and administration and documents and all the rest of it, she must have looked at it and gone, where do I start? What do I do? I mean, how's this going to go anywhere? And we're back to where we were before. Now it's another one bites the dust. That's the third one gone. And you're right, Theresa May was responsible for appointing all three, and she's now prime minister, and it's all fine, I'm prime minister. Well, it's not all fine, because look what you've done to this investigation. You've basically destroyed it. And from what I read of this article, where it was describing just one morning's proceedings, or another time, another day's proceedings, and what the tiny, tiny, next to nothing that happened in that period, goodness knows when this is going to report. And of course, it will be years ahead. And that's what they're doing. They're throwing it into the long grass, and putting as much time between people's real awareness of it, which was when it all came out and it was everywhere. And of course, it's now largely been forgotten by most people, the revelations that came out in the wake of the Jimmy Savile revelations and all that followed. And it's been slowed down, and this is the way they work. You know, I did a meme when this was all breaking and the political paedophile ring was becoming mainstream knowledge, of Prime Minister David Cameron saying, "Oh my God, what do I do? Oh, I know, I'll call an inquiry and spin it out as long as I can," and that was to that effect, and that's what's happened. If this Justice Lowell Goddard looked at it and thought, I can't cope, well, I can have some sympathy with that if that was the reason. And it's this thing of dragging something out is also applicable to the other question that's been raised, which is Brexit. You know, when we voted to come out, there should have been a quick activation of the article that started the process, and we should have started the process by now. But instead, they're dragging it out and dragging it out. And the Prime Minister May comes in and says Brexit means Brexit. Well, that sounds good and that sounds positive. But then it's again dragged out. And the longer they can drag it out, the more events can happen where they say, well, actually, you know, in the light of current events, we feel that the British people should be given another chance to see if they really want to do this. And that is a possibility. And that which campaigned so successfully to get us out must not now walk away and think the job's done. As I said, within an hour of the vote, this is just the start. This is just the start. And it was, and it is. We've got to keep at it. We've got to keep the pressure on, and not just think that it's gonna happen because we voted it for it. That's absolutely not necessarily the case. But we mustn't let them get away with it. Simple as that. And be streetwise that there are very significant, powerful forces that want to make sure we don't come out. But we must make sure that we do.
And it's that dragging it out process and. That's so discouraging for people to see. And then, of course, they observe that the team that led the Vote Leave campaign, people, of course, you know, most memorably, people like Boris Johnson. And I think, if memory serves, Liam Fox was also one. Yeah. Michael Fallon was one. Well, Johnson is now, of course, Foreign Secretary. Fox was appointed to the cabinet as well. And these guys have gone very silent about the urgency for Britain to at least officially inform Brussels that the United Kingdom, I should say, not Britain, the United Kingdom wants to leave the European Union. And one of the things I obviously do have a soapbox, I do have opinions, and I say things from time to time. One of the things I was very concerned about at the very beginning was how these guys were almost made the official Vote Leave team because of who they are. And I mean, you talked at great length on davidicke.com about how Johnson at the very beginning was saying that he would renegotiate Britain's way back in under more favourable terms from an out position, which was absolutely ludicrous. So these people were almost like they were ringers from the word go, David. Johnson.
Yeah, well,
if
they're politicians, they're overwhelmingly, with a few honourable exceptions, not to be trusted. And what they say in the moment is what suits them in the moment, and they'll say something else in another moment. This is the way politics works. So I wouldn't trust Johnson, and I wouldn't trust any of them. We can only judge the situation by their actions, not by their words. And just because Theresa May says Brexit means Brexit does not mean that that's how it turns out. What we must do, like I say, is keep the pressure on and not just sit around and say, well, I'm a bit worried that we won't come out. Well, let's get involved then. Let's get involved. Let's put the pressure on. Let's keep highlighting the fact. Let's keep pressurizing them to trigger that article that will start the process. Let's keep on. You know, this is the thing. You kind of learn when you're involved in this for a long time. The greatest thing that you can have, and the most important thing you need, is persistence to keep coming back, being knocked down, getting up and coming back, and taking a few steps further forward, and then getting knocked down, and then getting up, and then going back and taking a few more steps forward. When you're dealing with something that doesn't want something to happen, then it's not just going to happen if you sit around and think it's just going to happen. It's not. We've got to keep going and keep being persistent and not think it's just for an election campaign. It's not. They don't want us to come out of Europe. The hidden hand doesn't. The establishment doesn't. None of them did. They had the shock. A massive shock when people ignored almost the entire political spectrum in Britain saying we must stay in and voted to come out. And therefore, they're not going to go quietly. That was blatantly obvious. And so we have to watch not every word meaningless. We need to watch every action, because that actions are what tell us what's going on, not words. They're to cover what's going on.
Daniel Ford tweets, a number of people have tweeted this as well. Hi, Daniel. Does David think it's a possibility that we actually will never leave Europe? Well, I suppose if we think that, we'll be pessimistic. What do you think?
That is what the hidden hand wants, clearly. I mean, the whole idea of the EU is to absorb more and more countries and therefore more and more sovereignty, not let people out to get some sort of sovereignty back. I mean, this is exactly what they didn't want. So they don't want us to leave Europe. Now, we as a people then have to decide if we're going to let them get away with that. And that decision and how we respond to it will decide if they get away with it or not. And what we need to be pressing for is to get this process started, because the longer it doesn't start, the more, again, people forget. People forget other things come into their lives. You know, if we go into big situations around the world in terms of world events, then coming out of the EU is going to go into the background in terms of people's focus. But that's the idea, that something will come along that will give them the excuse to say, well, we must give the British people another choice in the light of new events. That's probably what they're planning to do, but we just must not let them do it. We must keep the pressure on to trigger these articles so we can get through this and get out of this fascist communist prison state called the EU. But we're going to need persistence in all areas. We're going to need persistence. This is not a hobby, you know. This is if you like, this is a mission. Thus, we need to keep at it, not when there's an R in the month and when it suits us. We need to keep at it all the time we can. That's the way we'll push the wall down, not by sitting and looking at the wall and hoping it's going to fall down by itself.
Yeah,
it's not.
You've got to take some action. I'm going to read a few tweets, and then I'll take a small break. And when we come back, then I'm just going to ask you about what people can expect in the United States ongoing, David. We'll have a little chat about that, what's going to happen in the next month or so, and then we'll let you go then. We've taken up a lot of your time. I know you're really busy, and you have a load of these to do because you're in great demand, of course, with the media, the mainstream and the independent media in the United States ahead of your trip and your tour there. Derek even, Irish Catholic Church looks a lot, or even took a lot of heat over child sex abuse, rightly so. But I think, says Derek, it's small change compared to the United Kingdom. That's an interesting one, that. Moving on.
The thing about that, Rich, is... I've investigated and researched this subject at great length over a lot of years. It's ingrained everywhere. You know, I just went to Australia. It's ingrained there. It's ingrained in New Zealand. It's ingrained in the United States. It's ingrained in Britain. It's ingrained in Ireland. I'm talking about within the establishment, well, within the Catholic Church. For sure, but I mean, within the establishment, in all its facets and expressions, within the political establishment, within the administrative establishment, within the corporate establishment, the banking establishment, it's ingrained, and there are reasons for it. They're deep in the rabbit hole reasons, but there's reasons why these elite bloodlines and their offshoots and gophers are involved in child abuse on the scale that they are. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. It's staggering in its scale. It's not just a church. It's not just a Westminster paedophile ring. It's a massive global disease, especially, although it's at all levels of society, especially in these so-called elite levels of the network and the bloodlines. It's part of life there. I mean, incest among those families, it's part of life. It's not even, you know, it's their normal. That's the good way of putting it.
Yeah, it's
their
norm.
Normal.
Yeah, it's the norm.
So it's everywhere.
Deb, Rich tweets, by the way, and all we do is drone on about how many medals we won in some sick self-gratification, for feck's sake. He's referring to the Olympics. Martin Houston tweets, we need a CSA inquiry properly run at a proper pace, concentrating on the Westminster paedophile ring. Now, Deb Fernandez tweets that...
That's a very important point that's been made there.
Yeah, it's a good point, that, yeah.
The reason, or one of the reasons, I've just given one of the other reasons, but one of the reasons they've given this inquiry so many different things to investigate and report on is to swamp the Westminster paedophile ring part of it. What there should have been is a an inquiry specifically on that and the offshoots of it, and then another inquiry into other things, so that people who were running these inquiries were dealing with something they could handle, dealing with something of a size, of a scale that they could make relatively rapid progress in. But by dumping it all together, they are drowning out the Westminster paedophile ring, and they're making it almost impossible to administer and therefore report in any credible way, certainly in any credible timescale. That's what's going on.
Brilliant stuff. Deb Fernandez says her family was schooled by her late father, who was a World War II veteran. He was well smartened up to all of this by the time of his death at age 93. Shades of grey indeed, says Deb. Sounds like he was a remarkable guy, your dad, Deb. Let me just scroll down. Interesting one here from David Stanford. On the Omran Dakhniesh story, the young boy, David Stanford asks simply, why didn't the photographer help the child rather than getting all those photographs of him? Really good question, that. Right, it's exactly 20 minutes to the top of the hour. We're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, we'll get a brief, as brief as David wants it to be. I know it's been another crazy day for him. The tour is obviously huge. There's a lot to be done between now and going to America for the first date in New York on September the 10th. So he won't keep him too much longer. But after the quick break, we'll ask him about what people can expect in the US. And I'm really intrigued about that particular event, that 12-hour speaking engagement in New York, a day before the 15th anniversary of 9/11. Back in a minute.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now. Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back. 20, not even 20, it's 18 minutes at the top of the hour. Go to theworldwidewakeup.com. Go to DavidIke.com for details of the American and European legs of the Worldwide Wake Up Tour. All the details are there about how to get tickets, where David is appearing and when. I tell you what, mate, what an amazing time to be in New York. It's the day before the 15th anniversary. But just before you say anything about that, Tommy B and Lou wanted to say that the interview you did with the Aborigines was absolutely brilliant. They loved that.
Well, that was a great experience. I felt very privileged to have been asked to go down and meet them when I was in Perth. And what was so fantastic about it for me was I talked to these two women at the Aboriginal people there, and they could have been talking out of my books, and I could have been talking out of their sort of verbal history going way back. In other words, we were speaking the same language. And they had come to their understanding of reality, their understanding of life, what happens in the hidden, from their verbal history being passed on through phenomenal numbers of generations, and I'd done it in the way that I've done it, and yet we'd come to the same conclusions. I found that absolutely fascinating, and they had their way of expressing it. I had my way of expressing it, but we were saying the same thing. And you know what has happened is that when this British Empire, other European empires as well, but the British Empire in particular, because it was so big, when they moved in on these lands, which were then populated by people that went way back into ancient history, they set out to destroy them. The people that overwhelmingly did the destroying, the rank and file, they did it because they thought these people were savages, because they were so stupid they didn't realize what they were talking about. But from the core, the hidden hand, they were orchestrating this destruction coldly, calculatedly, on purpose. Because if you are going to impose a perception, a global perception program on the target population, then you have to, as much as you can, destroy any alternative version of events, any alternative version of reality, any alternative version of history. And that's what they did with the native peoples. They did it in Africa. They did it in South America, Central America. They did it in North America. They did it in Australia, etc. But what was fantastic talking to those two women was how they didn't quite manage it. And the story, the knowledge, has been passed on, has survived through to present time. I've seen it with other people like Credo Mutwa in the Zulu shaman in South Africa. And what they've tried to do in terms of the native peoples that they didn't destroy completely, and of course they killed vast numbers of them, is to assimilate them into the target population global program. And a lot of people from these formerly native peoples and ancient peoples have been assimilated, but significant numbers have not. And those people, for those people, their time has come, because as we go through this awakening, as people start to open their minds to much greater truths and possibilities and explanations than those they've been downloading from the system, so these native peoples that were like the Aboriginals in Australia, but so many others around the world, as they've been seen by program people, the postage stamp program people, as savages and stupid and crazy and primitive, so the awakening mentality sees them for what they are: carriers of very, very significant knowledge from the ancient world. Before this this lockdown of knowledge began and the global program started to be installed. So it's just fantastic to have this coming together of people from very different backgrounds who've come to their conclusions from very different roads and routes, but they're speaking the same language. It was unbelievable. I had such a great time.
It looked it too, mate. It looked it. Just before we talk briefly about the New York date and America, I say it briefly because we'll run out of time quickly. But before we do that, Shona tweets, Shona Dryden on Twitter, is Credo Mutwa still around? I don't think he is, David, is he?
Yeah, as far as I know, he is, yeah.
Is he? Is he still around, is he?
As far as I know, all right, yeah. I've not spoken to him for a while.
Well, that's good news, that, yeah. Because I've seen your videos with him and your interviews with him, and you get this sense of great knowledge
That's one of the situations. You're moving around, you're focused, you're traveling, and you lose touch with people. When I used to go out there a lot, but of course I can't do that now because of all the other things that are happening. But yes, as far as I know, yeah, great man, and an amazing story, and an amazing story of persistence, because given that man's life and what happened to him, there would have been every reason for him to walk away, but he never has. Amazing man. And it was a great privilege to know him.
Fantastic. And if anybody wants to see David's conversations with him, go to David's YouTube channel. All that information is there, and those videos are there. They're terrific to watch. Go to davidicke.com. It's all there. So you're in New York on September the 10th, which is a day before the 15th anniversary. People like me who you know, began to see the world differently after September the 11th. For us, it will always be massively important, David, to keep talking about it. What do you think it's going to be like for you to be there talking to a New York audience on that particular date?
Well, funnily enough, it sounds like it was planned. It wasn't. It was, you know, my son Jamie and the other organizers were looking to go to America in the autumn because we were going to Australia in the July, August. And the date the hall had was September the 10th. So that's how it came about. Synchronicity. I mean, meant to be, but not consciously decided in that way. And I think it is very, very significant, and it's very important we keep highlighting it, because let us not forget a number of things. All this stuff in the Middle East was triggered by 9/11. Wouldn't have happened otherwise. There'd been no invasion of Iraq. There'd been no invasion of Afghanistan. And lots of things that have followed would not have happened. So that was the trigger. The other thing is that, and this is something I said a lot in Australia on the mainstream media, because I was invited a lot onto mainstream national radio stations, even television stations, and I got a lot of information out that would never have got out on the mainstream before. And one of the points I made was that, and continually made, because I saw their faces change when I made it. You know, these people are, yeah, well, we're conspiracy theorists. And I said, you know, the invasion of Iraq, did they find weapons of mass destruction? Well, no. They lied about weapons of mass destruction to justify an invasion. Well, yeah. Well, the same people that told us that gave us the official story of 9/11. Not just the same, you know, government, the same people, the same individuals. And you see their faces change. And you say to them, so why do you accept that those same people lied about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq to justify a catastrophic invasion and all that's kicked off as a result of it? And yet you kind of look in disdain that people like me are questioning the official story of 9/11. You know, it's journalistic schizophrenia. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
That you can accept one and then think that they, although they lied completely about that, they told the 100% truth about 9/11. I mean, it's a nonsense. It's ridiculous. It's cognitive dissonance. That's what it is. And when you point that out, you see their faces change and they go, well, actually, that's right, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
From 9/11, you can then go into the sequence that has brought us to where we are now with the, you know, the project for the New American Century involving Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and Cheney and Dove Zakheim, who ran the whole Pentagon budget in the Bush administration, how they produced that document in September 2000 saying they wanted to invade a list of countries and they named them. And they were including Iraq, Libya, Syria. And as a result of 9/11, and they said in the document that something like a Pearl Harbor had to happen so that this sequence of invasions and wars could happen, that because as a result of 9/11, that list of countries named a year before 9/11 by people who were part of the fundamentally part of the Bush administration at the time of 9/11. As a result of 9/11, that list of countries they wanted to invade and regime change have been picked off. And they've been picked off under the administration of Bush and Blair. And then the list carried on being picked off under Cameron and Obama, because, again, the hidden hand is controlling the list. And thus, who is in power in the White House to continue the list? And the same is planned with Clinton and or Trump. So from 9/11, you can start to produce connections and connect dots from 9/11, which make complete sense of the world that we're in now and why things have happened and why things are happening. It's fundamentally important. And again, it's so important not to forget it, because it was the trigger from which all this has come. And so who benefits? Those that wanted all that has come to happen. And it's going to be a great opportunity in New York a day before the 15th anniversary to put this into context, because, you know, the presentations that I'm doing around the world, and they are a change for each country to bring in things about that country. But the overall presentation over the 10 hours of speaking is context. Context. That's what's missing. Context. You can look at an individual event. It might be a terrorist event. It might be an economic collapse, or it might be the global warming hoax. You can see them as individual things, or you can put them into context and show how they connect to each other. And then, whoa, do they look different to what they look like in and of themselves? And it's that context, that pulling the web together and showing that the dots, the strands, are part of a much greater picture. They all fit together. That's had a massive impact on people that have come along. And it's been incredible. The reaction of the audiences have been incredible.
And it's going to be amazing in America. That's just about all we have time for. Go to theworldwidewakeup.com. David will be coming somewhere to a town somewhere near you, a city somewhere near you. Check out all the European dates and go and see him. I'm telling you, you will never see anything like it as long as you live. DavidIke.com or theworldwidewakeup.com. Always brilliant to chat with you, mate. Godspeed to you and the team.
Oh, it's Manchester and Ireland in January, of course.
I can't forget that. Of course, the 14th of January here in Manchester, I believe.
Yeah. And the interest 21st. In that event has been phenomenal. It's going to be incredible.
Yeah, because it's been a long time since you've spoken in these parts, I think. That's all. I mean, there's obviously huge interest anyway. But well, added to the fact you're not being up here,
things have kind of changed. The last time I tried to speak in Manchester, I couldn't find anyone that would have me, any venue that would have me.
Yeah, different times.
And how things have changed.
Now, the amazing Apollo Theatre, which is an amazing theatre.
Wonderful. The only problems season. We've had in terms of venues on this tour is, funny enough, Germany.
I've been watching on David.com.
We got one now. They're going to talk next year in Germany. But so many venues turned us down because of what I'm saying. And of course, Germany's a free country.
Of course it is. You and the team, Jamie and all the gang who put together the tour, have a brilliant time in America, mate. Of course you will. And I'm sure we'll swap emails while you're over there. I'll be following it closely on davidike.com and on your Facebook page as well. Look after yourself and we'll talk real soon.
Cheers, Rich.
Thanks, David. David Icke on the line to us there from his home on the Isle of Wight. Remember, theworldwidewakeup.com, davidike.com. That's where all the information is. That's it for the programme. No time to say much other than thanks to my producer, Claire, to Aaron, to Simon. Simon, who does the YouTube channel as well. All of this will be repeated on a loop from 11 p.m. BST, which is in just over an hour. And the interview will be on YouTube very early tomorrow morning. And again, a big thanks to Mark Bajerski. Go to markbajerski.com. He's Mark Bajerski, as you know, but it's Mark Bajerski, BAJERSKI.com. Top man, and to Patricia Braunschweiler and everybody who supports the Richie Allen Show. Go to richieallen.co.uk and do please make a donation to this program if you can, because it depends on your support. Until tomorrow, Wednesday at 8 p.m. BST. Bye for now. Can't see nothing coming up behind. Make my way through this darkness. I can't feel nothing but this chain that binds me. Lost track of how far.